I mean, don't do something within the first 3 months of your baby's life, I reckon. An experience podcast was really cool, like making yourself go through a thing. I used to talk with Lewis about that all the time because there's always articles about like, I quit sugar for a year. I didn't have sex for a year or whatever. It's like a great leaping off point for a book or something. And so I always knew in the back of my mind, I was like, maybe I could do a thing where I don't do a thing. Waste. That's it. That's my thing. So yeah, that'd be a great way if you're thinking of making a podcast. Stop doing a thing and document your journey about stopping doing the thing.
Hi, I'm Jules, and with me as always is Anthony.
Hello.
Today we're speaking with Veronica Milsom of Zero Waste Baby. It's an 8-part comedy documentary podcast where Veronica attempts to do the first 3 months of her newborn's life waste-free, which is one hell of an undertaking. I'm actually on the cusp of parenthood myself, so found the subject matter super interesting.
How far out are you?
3 months left to go. Not even. We have 2 months left to go. 2.5.
Exciting.
We have about 2.5 months left to go. But yeah, so Lindsay and I, my wife, we were listening to this in the car as we were going around and doing all of the things that, you know, we found out throughout the podcast that maybe you shouldn't do. But, you know, it's our first baby. So there is, you know, part of the excitement about it is just collecting a whole bunch of things. And I was happy to share with Veronica that we were doing things like reusable nappies and all that sort of stuff.
So it was helpful.
It was very helpful. And it was very fun and engaging. I mean, as I said, there were 8 parts, but pretty short, and we were able to get through them basically in the drive out to IKEA and back.
As you know, prepping for the show is sometimes very tough. We try and consume as much content as possible around the podcast of the people we interview before we interview them. This is so easy. 8 episodes, 20 minutes per episode, just snack through them. And a jumping off point would just be start at episode one.
Yeah, that's right.
Jump through the whole thing.
We've done it before where we've sort of done a few at the start and a few at the middle, or, you know, in the Dragon Friends just tried to do a whole season. But yeah, this one, yeah, it was only 8 episodes, so we were able to do that really easily.
And super easy. Like, it's really well produced. I'll give it to the Podcast One team. They know what they're doing in terms of producing content. And Veronica's a pro. It's smart. It's funny. It's easy listening. And you learn a lot. Watch out for the music when you listen to this podcast. It was done by Veronica's brother, who's a bit of a emerging podcast mogul as well.
Absolutely.
Might have to get him on.
Absolutely. And we can get on Big Mill as well. Well, enough from us. Why don't we just dive right in? Veronica, why don't you tell us about Zero Waste Baby?
So the podcast basically is about me attempting to save the environment single-handedly by having zero waste while I raised my newborn baby in the first 3 months of her life, but then ongoing as well. And it was disastrously hard, but also fun and challenging.
And this is your second baby, but your first podcast that you've done?
It is, yeah. And my first like comedy documentary podcast. So I'd never really made a documentary before. And I think I just bluffed my way through the process with Podcast One, just telling them like, yeah, let's do this. I can totally do this. And then admitted it about, 2 months in the writing process. So I was like, so just so you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And they were like, yeah, no, all good. You seem to be like totally on track. So it was there were a lot of learning moments, I'll say, as far as like recording way too much, which I think a mistake everyone would make when they're doing a documentary probably. But I did a lot of journaling, like diarizing moments through the first 3 months of my baby's life, and even took a microphone into the birth suite.
So that was real footage.
Yes.
Real audio.
Yes, it was. I think the nurse thought I was crazy. And maybe I am. And then I listening back to it, because I did sort of all the edit notes. And I was like, why did I do this? This is so horrible to listen back to.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I've never had a kid, but anecdotally I've heard through friends and pop culture that the first 3 months of a newborn's life is quite a challenging time. What possessed you to do this?
Yeah, why did you decide to make it more challenging?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wanted to actually do something about the environment, and I thought I would make a podcast to document the entire thing. So it's legit that I really wanted to do something, and that I had a conversation with my husband when I was about 6 months pregnant, where we were lying in bed, and I was just looking at all of the horrible things going on across summer, you know, like Amazon rainforest was burning, a whole of Australia was burning, droughts, everything that could possibly go wrong to do with the environment was. I was like, why are we bringing a kid into this world? I was like, it's too late now. Like, I'm very pregnant. I was like, what can I do? What sort of a voice can I possibly have? And I was like, maybe there's this, you know, I can try to reduce the waste and I can try to inspire other people to do the same thing. So it was a bloody noble cause. And then actually the first 3 months aren't as tricky as it gets a bit later on because they sleep quite a lot.
Okay.
So, it got harder the longer I went through the process where I had Zoe, my baby, would go to sleep and I knew that I had 45 minutes to quickly write a script. It kept me to a good time schedule actually. Like, it was good to know that you had little moments of pockets of time, but very stress-inducing at the same time.
So this is your first podcast, but you obviously come from radio. And your husband, Nick, was a TV producer, is that right?
Yeah.
You both came into this with a little bit of knowledge about, you know, how to create a show, but it was your first time podcasting. I mean, what were the kind of big differences that you found straight off the bat, really?
Between TV and radio and podcasting. Well, I mean, the big thing is just the freedom in podcasting, isn't it? You can go for as long as you want or as short as you want. There's such time restraints on the radio. You know, there's the clock, which is divided up into pieces where you're like segment, song, segment, news, headlines or whatever. And it was just an open book, you know, you could do whatever you possibly wanted, which was freeing but also terrifying. So I think that was a really big difference. The other big difference was being by myself, you know, without Lewis. And I ended up getting him on board for one of the episodes because I thought, A, great talent, B, I want to make a placenta into a sausage roll. Who will be completely disgusted by this? Lewis.
Yeah.
He will give me exactly what I need. And I also just thought it was probably like a good transition for getting Triple J listeners to, you know, be able to hear and understand me having been on the radio with him and then what we would sound like when I was hosting something and he was on it too.
Good way to tap into your audience space.
Yeah, I think so. Plus, I knew that the Triple J audience, like I know them very well because I've spent such a long time on Triple J and I know that they care deeply about the environment too. So I was like, oh, this will be something that they will care about as well.
And you ended up at the podcast. Ended up at Podcast One. Seems like a few ex Triple J's ended up there.
Oh my God! Now Linda Mariano as well. It's wild. So yeah, Tom Tilley, Matt and Alex, Linda
and Brooke.
Me.
I think are they? Or?
That's right, yeah. Brooke as well. Jeez. Yeah, and I think that Sam Kavanagh, who looks after the Daily Turnaround podcast, of Podcast One now, he used to listen to Triple J all the time, and was. Sometimes texting in and stuff or getting in touch with people. So I think he secretly loves Triple J. Don't know if I should say that. It's probably open about it. I mean, it's obvious now, isn't it?
So did Sam Cav come for you or did you put something in front of them? How did it
happen? So I put something in front of them initially and was sort of shopping around who I thought would be a good fit. But I also was keen on Podcast One because of the Oz Stereo link and... The thing about Triple J is there's not a very obvious career path of where to go afterwards. Like there's some people like the doctor who's working in regional local radio or, you know, Robbie Buck or, you know, Adam Spencer or whatever, people who go on to work in local radio. But I was like, oh, well, I have worked in commercial radio before. Maybe I'll entertain the idea of hopefully working in commercial radio again. Oz Stereo could be the place that I, you know.
Good gateway.
Yeah, maybe. I thought that could be an opportunity. So that was why I chose Podcast One. And then, they should have headhunted me though, shouldn't they? It's embarrassing that they didn't. They headhunted everybody else.
We can edit this and say that they did, maybe. Would that be better?
Yeah, sure.
So you're about 6 months in and you're discussing, you know, what the show might be. What was the kind of pitch process like when you took that idea forward?
So, yeah, when I took the pitch to Podcast One, I said that I wanted it to be like way more like bite-sized chunks, like 8-minute episodes or whatever. And I think originally it was it was way more stunty in the beginning. God, I got pretty stunty by the end. I worked with Jen Goggin, who is one of the amazing producers there, who was so hands-on. And her attention to detail is ridiculous. She was just a joy through the entire process. So she really led me through because she'd worked in BBC documentaries and stuff and enjoyed my comedy, and I did hers too. So she held my hand through the process, and I think we sort of massaged what the concept was over time.
Mm-hmm. And did you write out, because it's eight episodes, they are about 20 minutes, just a little bit less each one.
Yeah.
Did you map out what this kind of first 3 months was going to look like and the kind of things you were going to try and hit along the way? I've got a child, my first, coming in June.
Ooh.
So probably more me. I'm shitting myself a little bit trying to figure out what the first 3 months is going to involve. So I can only imagine trying to wedge in this kind of narrative around what's going on there as well. What was that like?
Yeah. Well, just firstly, I never would have been able to make this podcast with my first baby. No. The only reason I could with my second is because I knew what to expect. And also, like, you don't know what sort of baby you're going to get. And I was just hedging my bets that I would get a good one.
Radio-friendly baby.
Yeah, exactly. And luckily, I did. But so your question is...
about sort of creating the narrative, or did you do that a lot up front, or did you kind of let it just roll through and speak to different people as you went along?
So I knew exactly what I was going to hit in each episode, so different themes in each. So one, I knew I was going to focus on nappies, and I knew it was going to be controversial because I talked to Craig Rucastle. I did all the interviews beforehand, and Craig Rucastle had said that there's not necessarily, like, it's negligible the difference that you can make to the environment with either cloth or reusable. And there's, like, if you're listening to this right now and you're like, what? There are a couple of caveats there. Listen to the podcast. But so I knew that he'd said a bombshell, which could be good, and that I could, like, reverse engineer some of the stuff. It was a real jigsaw puzzle, working it all out, way more than I thought it would be. But yeah, I'd plotted out that there was going to be one about using no nappies at all, one about food, one about aftermath of the birth, the placenta and all that sort of stuff. What do you think you're doing with your placenta?
I don't think I'm going to be eating it. I mean, the recipe did sound nice.
Jerky. Mm.
Yeah, jerky. The pill form is a potential, but look, I think that we might dispose of the placenta.
Yeah, just burn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most common route that people go down, so... there's no shame in that.
We are trying to be sort of as conscious of waste as we can, and yep. We've got our reusable nappies ready to go on a little shelf and everything.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled to hear, during this, I was listening with my wife as we were going around doing baby prep things.
Awesome.
And just hearing that, a lot of parents also do have one or two disposable ones for the evening was... thank you very much for including that.
Oh, totally. And yeah, the bamboo ones are really good. And so, yeah, I'd spoken to a bunch of influencer people at the time. I think Podcast One was very interested in me getting people involved who had an audience already, so yep. We could sort of draw on, which is very common at the moment. You're like, how many Instagram followers do they have? Oh, we'll maybe get them on board. You're like, oh, I hate this world of that bullshit.
There must be a shitload of parent influences to get through.
Yeah.
To decide on the right one.
Well, I mean, I focus particularly on zero waste parent influences. So they're a slightly more narrow field.
Yeah.
But they were great, actually. They were fantastic and led me in a lot of the right directions. So they were who I spoke to first, and then that kind of led me to the next thing of going, oh, maybe I should have an episode about that. The biggest downfall about the eight episodes and 20 minutes of each, which, like, if you're thinking of making a podcast and listening, is something I wouldn't have thought of before. It's just having something evergreen, yes, great, but I wish that I'd done something that more carried over week to week. It's basically lost in Never Never Land now. You know, the podcast?
Yes.
It's so hard for people to find things unless they're popping up as a notification or constantly popping up in their feed as a weekly podcast.
Yeah, it almost needs to go into some sort of curriculum or course where people go, look, if you want to know about this, go here. But as opposed to, it's not popping up every week, it is tough.
Yeah, you kind of got to just make something where people can discover a new episode weekly. Otherwise, it's way too difficult to find.
Yeah, you're almost in the Audible space at that point.
Yeah, although at least people don't have to pay for it.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Were you releasing them week by week though over that period?
Yes.
And sort of fine tuning as you went through, or did you do a lot of the recording and editing up front?
We were probably a couple of episodes ahead, so maybe 3 weeks ahead each time. But my brother was making all the music for them, all like original compositions for each bit, and I think he was getting to the point where he was like run off his feet. I also didn't pay him ever, and so I was like, oh my God, thank you so much for being a genius who is doing this for free, and that I'm making you work so quickly.
Is that what he does, or is it something outside the box for him as well?
Yeah, he's like he was a lawyer, and now he's become a podcast tycoon. Right. Yeah. So he started off by quitting his job as a lawyer, and then he was like, I'll make a podcast about the law. It was called The Rule Book. This was ages ago, maybe like 8 years ago or something. And then he started to just get interested in making podcasts. He's also a musician. So now he composes music for podcasts and produces them too. So he worked on like Nazim's Audible podcast.
Right.
And he just now it's his full-time job. There's not enough hours in the day for the amount of podcasts he produces. And with a whole heap of Melbourne comedians.
So you thought you'd just wedge in a bit more for free.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But he's a sweet contact for me to have, actually. He's pretty handy. He read all through all of my scripts, and he's just had a kid as well. So yeah, it all made a lot of sense.
So he's been doing this for the past 8 years. I mean, when did you start thinking about doing one yourself?
Well, I mean, there was no chance while Triple J was on. Mm. Veronica and Lewis show had a podcast, but I think we had like 40,000 listeners a week or something, and it just wasn't enough for the Triple J to say that it was worth continuing. Huh. Whereas people now are like, who cares? Like 5,000 heaps or something. Yeah. But I think back then they were like, no, that's just nothing. We're not going to put resources towards that. So we stopped having a podcast from like year two of the drive show. And it means nothing's exists online.
Right.
If I try to listen back to a show now, it's nowhere. It's so weird, even as an archive or as something that you could go, oh, I liked those guys. I listened to the podcast. No, there was none.
Wow. When you say it was a podcast, was it sort of traditional radio to podcast version where it's all of the talking, none of the music?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And the interviews, it was sort of compilations, which people don't do anymore. And then there was a process at the ABC where they were talking about, would we like to pitch a segment as a podcast or a brand new idea, which was completely outside of anything on air that we could make as a podcast. But nothing ever, it's a bureaucracy, nothing. It's hard to make stuff happen.
It's funny how much the world's shifted, though, in such a short period of time.
Yeah, isn't it? That now it's just more about like quantity, just like getting stuff out in people's faces. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and I'm sure you and Lewis could probably walk a podcast in the door at Podcast One if you wanted to, if you were inclined, and there'd be tons of interest.
Yeah, totally. But I think that it's so under-resourced at Triple J that they were like, we've got this guy that we could be getting to make videos for Facebook or something. We're not going to get him to make a compilation, which wouldn't have taken.
I think that's how Mark Fennell started out at FBI. He was just turning all the radio shows to podcasts, and that's where he cut his teeth.
Is that right? And then he was on that SBS movie show where he had that big fro, and he was super cute. I love looking at old photos of Mark Fennell.
So with all the guests that you had, you did speak to all of them up front and then kind of just work out how they were going to fit in within the structure as you went along?
That's right. And they was in the middle of the pandemic. So that was in about March in 2020. I did all of the interviews. So they're all on Zoom, and I'd never used Zoom before because it was kind of like just new then. And I didn't know that I was supposed to be getting people to record audio that wasn't through Zoom, you know, that whole record it separately situation. So a bunch of the audio was like fucked. And I interviewed this one girl twice. There was lots of trial and error in the whole thing, and then the transcriptions, and oh gosh, it's actually such a night. In hindsight, I'm like, oh, I should make another podcast, and then the more I talk about it, I'm like, oh no, I remember.
How do you find it from like a comedy point of view? Because I know that like we've done a few over Zoom, and depending on what, you know, each the internet connection's like, there can be a bit of a delay, which can really cause some problems if you're trying
horrible.
To be clever.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. But I think it was the experience that I'd had in radio really did help for having those one-on-one chats with people where I was working on the fly going, oh, that exact bit I'll use. Oh, that exact bit I'll use, which is kind of just like what, like I was editing in my brain. So that was handy. And yeah, there weren't too many laggy, uncomfortable moments that you heard in the final product anyway.
Very good editing.
And how quickly, oh, how early in the process did you interview Craig? Because he kind of debunks the name of the show.
Yes.
Straight away.
Yeah, yeah. Craig was the hardest guy to pin down. He was the busiest man at that point. And I really wanted to meet him face to face because I knew that he would appear in multiple episodes. So I didn't want it to be via Zoom. And I also, I love the painting a picture of where you're meeting someone and things happening in the cafe and stuff. So I knew that I wanted that to happen. So I was calling him. I was like actually harassing him quite a lot and saying, I really want to interview you for my podcast. And he was like, oh, okay. I was like, I can come to your house. And he was like, no, let's meet at a cafe.
I prefer you didn't do that.
Please don't. And so because that was the thing, I'd talked to Mark Fennell on the phone and he had said to me one of the really good lessons that I've learned about interviewing someone is get them to do a thing while you're talking to them. Because it's a great breaker. So, for example, in one of his podcasts I was listening to, the guns one or whatever, there was a guy teaching him how to use a gun and polishing guns while they were doing an interview. It's also a great way to relax the talent and just make free them up to, if they're doing something with their hands, they'll be more likely to just be open in the interview. So I was like, Craig, can I come to your house and maybe we can sort through your bins or do something waste related? And he was like, no, let's meet at a cafe. And so we ate breakfast. And I mean, I don't think I needed to loosen up Craig. He's like one of the most experienced media talent going around. But yeah, I think it gave us something to talk about, particularly because there was just like mozzies absolutely everywhere in this cafe that we're in. And I had this like 8-week-old baby or something that I was terrified was going to get bitten.
So you've got the baby in one hand and the microphone in the other?
Yeah.
And, oh, wow.
I did that the whole way. And then it was so hard. I arrived at this one woman, the placenta woman who...
Virginia Maddock.
Oh, my gosh. What? Thank you for knowing that.
The people don't realise that we have a screen in front of us, so we'll edit that
out. That's not making the cut.
Yeah, so Virginia Maddock, she's the placenta encapsulator. Yes, Virginia Maddock's the placenta encapsulator. So she... I turned up to her house and she was like, hi, thanks for coming. And it's always awkward. I'm like arrived alone to a stranger's house. And I was like, oh, do you mind if I... can I breastfeed the baby? So I breastfed the baby for a while we just had a casual conversation while I was like talking to her about things in her house. And I was like, do you mind if we record this casual conversation?
Yeah.
It's so weird being your own producer in times like that where you're sort of vulnerable, let alone lugging a kid around the whole time.
Yeah, at least, I mean, you're talking to people who are sort of in that field and you know, after the same kind of things you are. So I guess it's
that's
good.
That's true. Yeah. And especially because she was like a maternal health nurse or something. So she was actually quite handy. She was like, oh, just lift her head up a bit. She's not latched properly. I was like, oh, thank you.
Did she have like walls of placentas around her? Like, what was the
like
house?
Aliens like, yeah. or something?
Oh, well, so she had this laundry off the side of the house where she did all of the encapsulating and it is rotten.
Yeah.
Like, just a big hunk of flesh, like an organ essentially. It looks like a cow pat, but it's blood and guts and stuff. I mean, it's not. But she loved it. Yeah. She had such a fondness for the placenta. And she would, you know, cut it up really lovingly. And she just loved the whole process of birth. And that was really inspiring, actually.
That process seems to vary, obviously, depending on what your birth is like. I think my sister hated her placenta by the end of it. This was something that she never wanted to see again. Whereas other people, I guess they cook it. So really quite a spectrum.
Eat on it for months. I had super easy births, so I saw the whole thing in quite a fine light. But some people who have, you know, 3-day labours or something, horrible. I would want to incinerate that placenta. Absolutely.
And you spoke to a very interesting spectrum of people.
Yes, I'm like some pretty out there kind of points of view. I think there was, you know,
Maha?
Someone up in Byron Bay. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Maha Al-Musa was so great. So she was really generous, actually. This is a woman who breastfed her kid until she was eight, or so, like, until the kid. I actually kept meaning to make jokes about this in the podcast when I was talking about the mum or the girl, but it got way too convoluted. She breastfed her kid until her kid was 8 years old, so well into primary school. And she talked about the horrible way that the media has dealt with her in the past. And so I did feel quite privileged that she was trusting me, that I wasn't going to fuck her over, essentially.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to talk about her and talk to her with, like, the respect that she deserves. It was decisions that she's made. And also, like, what's right or wrong? I think it's like a beautiful thing that she and her child have gone through. And she, like, in every moment of this podcast, my mind really was changed. I was like, maybe it is great to just breastfeed your kid as long as you can, because it's just what you, it's like this privilege that's afforded to you, and why wouldn't you just do it? And if it makes you feel good, if it makes a kid feel good, who cares about everyone else?
Did you find, I suppose, if your sort of opinion's changing that way as it goes on, were there any parts where you thought, like, okay, what this person is talking about is a little out there and probably something I wouldn't necessarily do, and I can tell the audience would be finding this maybe a bit funny or informative or however they're reacting to it. Do you want to, like, you know, insert the comedy in about it as well? Because, I mean, it's a bit of a, it's an easy kind of thing to make jokes about if someone breastfeeding, you know, at 8 years old and the kid's basically asking, you know, being able to have a conversation about taste and everything like that.
Yeah. But isn't it way more interesting to just let the person talk and like hear what they have to say and how they landed at the decision of doing that? She's a fascinating woman who, so many things I didn't even get to say about her. Like, she belly danced through her birth. And there's videos of her doing that online. I can't remember if I said that on.
It's mind-blowing. It was in there.
Was it? Okay, great. Yeah, so the videos are where she's just like, her hips are really sensually moving, and it's like this experience, which is not the thing that I went through when I was giving birth. Nick and I were just like, let's make this happen, in and out. Let's just go home with a baby and make sure nothing went wrong. But she was like, I'm just going to, like, make sure I, you know, really make a moment out of this. And it'll be the way that you bring a child into the world is, like, very much, it'll change them as a person. I don't know if that's true, but that's what some people believe.
I really like how you've approached this. I mean, you've got elimination consultant. Or is it elimination communication?
Yes, yes, yes.
So that's basically no nappies, when your kid's ready to go, read the signs and let them go. But that's how we evolved. There's no instruction manual. I mean,
caveman style. I got to thinking about that a lot too. That, when did nappies come into play? And there's a whole heap of conspiracy theories about nappies that I didn't even end up getting into.
Ooh.
That, like, you know, there's they're mostly American, but that in America, people are recommended to have their kids in nappies until they're like 2 years old, and it's just all a big conspiracy that it's got to do with the big nappy companies, and pediatricians are paid off to say that they should and all this, which you'd believe.
Yeah, it's very easy to take that.
It's horrible for the environment, you know.
Yeah.
To have so many nappies going into landfill. But that's a whole different area that I didn't even get to in the podcast. It was crazy how streamlined you had to end up getting. Like, I had so much stuff on the cutting room floor, which I guess is normal for a doco.
So what was your process then? So you're out there on your own. Well, you're out there with baby in hand, microphones, recording device, and then you're taking all this information, and then your brother's doing music. What's happening with the editing?
So then I would take the audio, transcribe that, then I would put an entire script together, send it off to Podcast One, and they would send me back an edit, plus my brother would do an edit of the script as well. Then it would be I would have, like, time codes and stuff next to all of the grabs. Is this so boring? Is it?
No.
This is just what and then time codes next to all of the grabs, and then it would be compiled by someone at Podcast One, Das, this amazing audio engineer. And then I would go in and do the links with literally, like, the baby strapped to my front. and just try to make sure she didn't make too much noise. She was a bit snuffly at points. You can kind of hear her going next to the microphone. And then I brought my in-law, you know, my mother-in-law in at one point to do some babysitting, and it was pretty hard to juggle. But, yeah, I would go into the Podcast One offices, and that was like in high-level pandemic time too. So,
right.
Yeah, it was a weird time to have made something generally, but also a shitty time to have made something about the environment because no one cared about it in 2020.
That's right. Single use went out the window.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, it was a horrible year for the environment. So I should have made something about being more sanitary or something, you know, like...
How'd you go from, I mean, you said initially you were thinking they were going to be 8-minute episodes and then they've ended up at 20. Was the content that you got initially, you know, I imagine it would have been a whole lot longer.
Yeah.
How did you kind of land on that 20-minute mark and think that that was right?
Well, I don't think it was because we thought 20 minutes was user-friendly. I think that we wanted it to be slightly uniform between episodes. But also I think it was just we listened to the episodes through so many times, and you'd never think this when you listen to a podcast, all of the bullshit that goes on in the background. Listened to it so many times and we're just like, cut that out, it's boring, cut that out, it's boring. So it was, we were just brutal about, you know, killing babies, as people say. And then we kind of ended up just getting around the 20-minute mark. Yeah, I don't think there was any sort of hard and fast rule.
It's good because a lot of the Podcast One podcasts come off as very professionally produced, but you've managed to keep in some elements of the mosquitoes at the cafe,
yeah,
your baby noises, just giving it that texture.
They were really into that because they don't have that many podcasts that are like mine at Podcast One. I think they do focus more on podcasts which... sort of turn up weekly or whatever,
yeah,
so that I think they're just much easier to sell. The other thing about my podcast, which is so shitty for Podcast One, is that it's basically about anti-consumerism.
Mm.
So it's so tricky to sell ad space for.
Yeah, you can't sell the disposable nappies.
Yeah, and I got contacted by disposable nappies companies asking if they could do ads, and I was like, no, it just, I'm so sorry to reject another ad, but I can't possibly say that I will like endorse it.
It was funny hearing, I can't remember what the brand was, but you know, you've reached out to try and get a comment from them, and it just felt like such
Huggies,
a missed opportunity,
yeah,
for them not to kind of, you know, at least talk about what they have coming up in this area.
That was weird because like I obviously am not a journalist, but I was doing some high level journalistic sort of investigation work and really hounding them to get in touch with me. I really wanted to go to their headquarters and put some tough questions to them and stuff, and they just didn't want to speak to me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make you guys sound like shit at the podcast. That's my right.
And they came to try and advertise with you anyway.
Yeah. Well, they didn't in particular, but yeah.
Has Big Mill been offered a podcast from Podcast One yet?
Ah, he wishes. No, so I have spoken with Podcast One and they're like, listen, we'd like to do something with Big Mill. He's really good, isn't he?
The star of the show.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like that all the time. Like, I can just remember coming back from, you know, netball training or whatever. Everybody's in the Tarago. Dad's driving. And he's just, like, cracking jokes in the front. And just, like, inappropriate stuff that, everyone loves because he's Big Mill.
Yeah.
He's just the Aussiest bloke you'll ever meet and has no filter. He'd be really good, and I think he'd be open to opportunities, you know?
It was a good little family affair, actually. You had your in-laws in there as well. I mean, your father-in-law is a, well, how do you put it?
Urologist.
Yeah, I think he was a dick doctor at some stage.
Dick doctor, yeah. Gosh, that was a handy get, actually. And I ended up writing an article for ABC Life about elimination communication the other day, and they said, oh, we need you to get an expert who is a doctor who really will just tell us whether elimination communication, if there's anything in it, whether it could be bad for a kid. And I asked him if he had any advice for who could be an expert, and he was like, oh, well, me. I was like, oh, okay. Jeez, I've used you as an expert too many times now. Yeah. But yeah, it was a real family affair, and that's been the whole way through, unfortunately, my whole radio career for my family, because they just keep getting roped into things.
So they're just used to you coming along with the microphone on the off chance that it might end up on a show or a podcast or something?
Oh, so much so. Yeah, I did an entire comedy festival show which mostly was based around my mum, so I think she was excited for the spotlight to be not on her for once.
You feature a dinner in the podcast with your in-laws where you basically ask your father-in-law if he had a vasectomy.
Yeah.
Or not.
Not a
Oh, no, if you do a vasectomy to his son, husband.
There was like a lot of, yes, there was a lot of stuff like that where I was like, oh, this will be a funnier if it's a dinner. It wasn't a dinner. Stuff like that.
Yeah, okay, right.
But if we're peeking behind the curtain, that was just me asking him randomly when I went over to his house one time. There's a lot of things where I'm like, oh, where would be the funniest thing for this to happen? Let's pretend it's a family dinner.
Well, my mind was racing when that was happening. I was thinking, when did you pull the microphone out? Yeah. How did this go? Was it after the second glass of wine? Did you wait for the third? What was going on? Was it dessert?
Yeah. Well, it's so much nicer to be able to paint like a picture with your words in that way, and rather than for it to be some sort of bland other situation. A lot of it is true, but some of the scenarios, I was like, nah, where's the best way? What's the best way that I could possibly do this? But yes, I did ask him if he would do a vasectomy on Nick, and Nick was not into it. He was not into the idea of having his balls cut by his dad.
By his father.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe or by someone else, but not the father.
Yeah.
People on the subject matter are pretty intense about, you know, how they want to raise their kids and what they're going to do in these first few months and just general parenthood. How's the response been from the audience of the podcast?
Really mixed, actually. Mostly very positive. Like, I've had so much great feedback on my Instagram messages. I had someone, like, pretty nasty feedback about the nappy episode with people not actually listening to it and hearing from someone else in the nappy community. It is, like, a really wild community of lefties.
Really?
That I was saying that you should use disposable nappies and that reusables are too hard. I was certainly not sugarcoating my experience of reusables, and that was their problem, that I wasn't like just advocating that people should use cloth nappies all the time. So, yeah, people wrote me some really nasty things on like Facebook messages. So I couldn't believe it, actually.
Triggered nappy trolls.
Yeah, which is a whole world. And I wondered if it might, which is why I included like this line in the final episode where I said, you know, and I do use reusable nappies and I think that they're great. And I was like, why am I pleasing the people? Yeah, I know, but I'm like, I guess I do want people to know I have been still using them, but they're not easy to use and I'm not going to pretend otherwise.
Do you engage with these people who kind of feedback this stuff? Or
At Triple J, we were always told like not to, but I did, yeah. Because
glutton for punishment.
Yeah, because sometimes when you're just like alone and it's 10 o'clock at night and you're watching TV and you see someone said it and you're like, I'm just going to write back. But you shouldn't. And then I would, like, if they said something mean again, I would just not write back again. I would be like, ha, I won. I didn't. You shouldn't engage, though, I reckon. It's bad.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
The haters, yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, look, we love your podcast. 20 minutes, 8 episodes, got through it in almost no time. I'm not in the same situation as Jules where I'm not invested in this space at all.
Mm.
And I loved it, ate it up, and feel wiser for it. But what are some podcasts you're into?
Well, the last podcast that I listened to was Steen Raskopoulos' new podcast, which is fully improvised. Gosh darn, what's it called? Congratulations on your... something like that. No. Anyway... let me look that up. But it's basically he gets famous people like Hamish Blake or Rhys Darby, great improvisers on, and Steen Raskopoulos is an amazing improviser. He interviews them about a project that does not exist. It's
right.
Completely unscripted. And so he's like, congratulations on the book. And then they're like, oh, yeah, you loved Dinosaurs Eat Women or whatever. And you're like, yeah. And so then they talk about the project. And it's a pretty fun listen.
Awesome. Hmm. Is it like a half hour?
Yeah, 40 minutes was the one I listened to yesterday. 1 second, I just want to see what it's called. Congratulations on the new... that's what it's called.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Do you think it could be a better name?
I think it's a pretty good name.
Oh, do you? Not memorable though. I didn't remember it, did I?
It's just, what was the last bit?
Yeah, congratulations on the new. And I highly recommend it. Yeah, it was fun.
Awesome. And then... we always like to talk to our guests about any advice you would give to wannabe podcasters or even radio hosts or anything in that audio landscape.
Oh, well, I mean, don't do something within the first 3 months of your baby's life, I reckon. An experience podcast was really cool, like making yourself go through a thing. I used to talk with Lewis about that all the time because there's always articles about like, I quit sugar for a year. I didn't have sex for a year or whatever. It's like a great leaping off point for a book or something. And so I always knew in the back of my mind, I was like, maybe I could do a thing where I don't do a thing. Waste. That's it. That's my thing. So yeah, that'd be a great way if you're thinking of making a podcast. Stop doing a thing and document your journey about stopping doing the thing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's covered everything. Thanks very much for the time, Veronica.
Yeah. And except don't make it stop doing a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. My journey to stop doing a podcast. It's 3 episodes and then it finishes.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Behind the Podcast. We'll be back with another episode next week. See you then.